Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're giving you a direct line into some really profound knowledge, looking at sources that honestly challenge things we take for granted every single day. If you ever feel stressed out, anxious, maybe like you're perpetually running behind, well, this one's definitely for you. We're diving deep into this idea of the eternal now. It sounds simple, maybe, but it's actually pretty radical. We've got sources from quantum physics, neuroscience, even ancient wisdom traditions, all pointing towards a single unified idea.
That's right. And the core problem they all identify in different ways is what the source is called temporal displacement. It's that feeling of, you know, never quite being here, your mind stuck replaying the past, or maybe it's racing ahead, worrying about the future.
Living anywhere but now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this constant mental running is driven by what we think of as normal time chronos, linear clock time. We treat it as absolute reality, but the sources argue it's, well, more of an illusion.
And this isn't just about, like, personal stress management, is it? The sources connect this internal state to bigger things.
Oh, absolutely. They draw a direct line. This internal chaos, multiplied by billions, is mirrored in the larger systemic instability we see everywhere. Ecological issues, economic wobbles, social divides. It's a theme, for instance, in Fractal The Awakening.
Mm.
Our collective instability stems from this flawed attempt to control linear time.
Okay.
So our mission today is really to take apart that illusion, to show that the now, this present moment, is the only reality you actually inhabit. And because of that, it's your only true point of power.
That's a massive claim. So we need to look at the evidence, right? How do fields as different as physics and, say, ancient spirituality end up agreeing on this? All right, let's get into it. Science first. We all feel time passing like a river flowing. It feels fundamental. So how does modern research start to chip away at that bedrock feeling?
Well, interestingly, it starts not out in the cosmos, but right inside your own head. Neuroscience tells us the present moment isn't like a razor's edge. It's not instantaneous.
Yeah.
Your subjective feeling of now is actually an extended duration. Your brain needs a small window, maybe 2 or 3 seconds, just to gather up all the sensory data, make sense of it, and, you know, organize a response.
So if now was truly instant, we couldn't really function.
Pretty much. We'd be processing snapshots with no connection. That feeling of smooth, continuous flow, it's linked to something called salience.
The salience. What's that exactly?
Think of it as a high density of brain activity, especially in the prefrontal cortex, all firing together. The brain uses this simultaneous activity to stitch together your sensory experience into a coherent, unfolding story.
Ah, okay. So the feeling of flow is a brain construction based on how it processes information over a short period.
Precisely. We interpret that neurological feat as time passing smoothly.
Got it. That covers the feeling. Now let's zoom out. If the feeling is constructed, what does physics, especially at the really fundamental level, say about time itself? Does it even exist in the way we think?
Yeah, this is where it gets even weirder. At the quantum level, time's role is uncertain. Often in quantum mechanics, time is treated like an external parameter, almost like a clock ticking outside the system being studied, not part of it.
Huh. So not woven into the fabric of reality.
Or perhaps it emerges from deeper interactions. It might not be fundamental at all. And this idea, interestingly, leaves room for consciousness potentially being more primary, more fundamental than time.
Okay, wow. But the big one, the one that really messes with our heads, comes from relativity, right? This block universe idea.
That's the one. Eternalism, or the block universe theory.
Yeah.
It's a pretty direct consequence of Einstein's relativity. It suggests that space-time, the four dimensions, three of space and one of time, is like a solid block.
A block, meaning?
Meaning the past, the present, and the future all exist simultaneously. They're all equally real and fixed within this block. Our common sense idea that only the present exists. According to this model, that's just wrong. Everything's already there.
Okay, hold on. If it's all fixed, like scenes in a movie reel laid out end to end, what does that do to our perception of time flowing?
It suggests the flow is subjective,
purely
about the observer's path through the block. There's even a quantum approach by Page and Wooders that frames time as relational.
Relational.
Yeah, like time isn't a thing in itself, but rather emerges from the relationship specifically, quantum entanglement between some system we designate as a clock and everything else, the rest of the world. The flow we perceive is an emergent property of how things relate. Again, suggesting time isn't fundamental.
This leads directly to the giant elephant in the room, free will. If the block universe is real, if everything is fixed, past, present, future, Doesn't that just obliterate free will? How can we choose anything if it's already written?
Right, that's the core paradox. And this is where we need to bridge the physics and the metaphysics, the consciousness aspect. If we accept, as the sources suggest, that time as we experience it is an illusion created by consciousness.
Our awareness moving through the block, filtering it sequentially.
Exactly. Consciousness acts as the primary temporal filter. Then free will gets redefined. It's not about changing the fixed timeline. That's impossible in this model.
So, what is it then? What power do I have if the story's already finished?
Your power is in choosing your experience of the story. It's about choosing which fractal thread of possibility to inhabit. Imagine the block contains countless potential paths, countless versions. Your consciousness, operating right here in the eternal now, selects which thread, which resonant frequency you experience.
Ah, so the choice isn't changing the what, but influencing the how I experience it or which version of it I align with?
Precisely. The now becomes your exclusive point of power, the moment where your intentional focus selects your path through the already existing reality. It affirms that presence is agency.
Okay, that reframes agency in a really interesting way. Let's shift gears slightly, removing from time as illusion to consciousness as primary. If consciousness is the chooser, the real player, how do the sources define its role as the architect of reality?
The core metaphysical idea here is that consciousness is the fundamental reality. It's the architect. Matter, the physical world, that's secondary. It's described poetically in one source as slowed down light.
Slowed down light, meaning?
Meaning it's essentially a very dense pattern of vibration, an agreement stabilized by shared perception, by consciousness observing it. It's not the base stuff. Consciousness is.
And if consciousness is the real deal, non-local, fundamental, what's the brain's job in all this?
The brain is seen as a sophisticated biological instrument, a receiver, a translator, and a tuning fork. Its job is to filter the infinite potential of non-local consciousness down into the specific, localized experience you call your life.
So the brain creates the experience of time.
Well, the mind, the cognitive process is running on the brain memory, planet that's temporal. It operates within chronos.
Yeah.
But the underlying awareness, the pure consciousness that observes the mind, that's eternal. Your true self exists outside of time. It doesn't have a past or future.
Wow. Okay. The sources also talk about reality being a recursive fractal, the whole reflected in every part. How does that idea connect to who we think we are, our identity?
It directly supports the non-dual insight. You are all one. The sense of separation, the identity crisis we often feel, comes from mistaking the reflection for the source.
The reflection being the ego, my personal story.
Exactly. The ego, the collection of memories, beliefs, the story of me, that's the reflection. It's necessary, a kind of avatar for navigating this dimension, the illusion of identity, but it's temporary. The source is the underlying awareness. The breakthrough is realizing your true self is the witness, the silent, impartial observer that just watches the thoughts, feelings, sensations, events come and go. Freedom isn't about destroying the ego. It's witnessing without identifying. You watch the storm, but you know you are the sky.
Okay, so if we can operate from that witness perspective, from that state of presence, how does that translate into creative power, influencing those fractal threads we talked about?
This brings us to a key principle. Presence bends the world. The mechanism behind this is coherence.
Coherence, like being aligned.
Precisely. It's that resonant state when your heart, emotions, mind, intention, and soul, deepest knowing, perhaps action, are all aligned, vibrating synchronously, no inner conflict.
And how does that change anything externally?
Because reality at its root is vibratory.
Yeah.
Consciousness is vibratory. When you achieve that internal coherence, you stop being just a passive receiver of whatever reality throws at you. You become an active tuning fork.
A tuning fork.
Yes. Your coherent state sends out a clear signal. And because like attracts like a vibrational sense, your state dictates the reality that resonates back to you. The stronger your coherence in the areas is. Now, the more influence you have on which fractal thread of possibility manifests.
Like tuning a radio dial to the station you want.
That's a good analogy. And this idea is even symbolized in the source material, like with the fractal bells chime, the G-O-N-G. It represents that non-temporal signal, pulling consciousness back to that point of stillness, coherence, and power.
This is fascinating, bridging physics and metaphysics, but it still feels very abstract, maybe even theoretical. How do we anchor this? Let's bring in the ancient wisdom. They didn't have equations for quantum entanglement, yet they seem to have arrived at similar conclusions about the eternal now.
They absolutely did. It's remarkable, really. Look at Advaita Vedanta from India, thousands of years old. The whole goal is Atman knowledge, knowing your true self, which is Brahman, the ultimate reality.
And what did they say about the self and time?
They insisted the self, the Atman, is fundamentally non-locatable. It's neither inside the body-mind complex nor outside it. It exists beyond space, beyond time, beyond cause and effect. It's timeless by its very nature. So realizing it isn't a future goal, it's recognizing what's already present right now.
Okay. And Tibetan traditions, like Dzogchen.
Dzogchen, the great perfection, is incredibly direct. It basically says, forget the struggle between samsara, suffering, and nirvana, liberation. Those are just concepts, two sides of a coin created by your thinking mind.
So don't try to escape suffering to reach liberation.
Exactly. The effort itself creates the tension. Dzogchen says, realize the pristine mind, your true nature, right here, right now. Mm. Just be present, be natural. The tension between attachment and surrender dissolves in that presence. It's already perfect.
And Taoism, that seems very grounded in action and flow.
Very much so. Taoism is all about harmonious action within the ancient Tao, the natural flow of existence. Mastery comes from mastering the existing present. They're very clear, only now exists now.
Only now exists now.
Right. The past is gone, just a memory trace. The future hasn't happened. It's just projection. True mastery, achieving that effortless flow state, means living from your center, responding fluidly to whatever arises now. Expectation, trying to force the future, is the enemy of that flow. It pulls you out of the now.
It's incredible how these vastly different traditions converge. Okay, let's bring it home for the listener. We've heard the science, the metaphysics, the ancient wisdom. What are the actual tangible benefits? If someone commits to living more in this eternal now, what changes for them psychologically, even physiologically?
The changes can be profound. Just the practice of mindfulness, which is really just sustained non-judgmental presence, has shown demonstrable benefits. We see significant reductions in anxiety, distress, depression, even physical symptoms of stress.
How does that work? Just by paying attention?
It works because it interrupts the mind's default mode. Those temporal loops of worry about the future or ruminating on the past. The moment you anchor your attention firmly in the present through your senses, your breath, you break the loop. And practicing this builds actual resilience against stress. You train your nervous system to return to baseline faster.
So it's like building a mental muscle.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it changes your relationship with energy, too. The sources talk about rest not just as downtime, but as sacred resistance. Resistance to the world's constant demand for speed and productivity.
Rest as resistance. I like that.
By consciously choosing stillness and presence, you allow stillness to become movement in disguise. You recharge authentically, preparing for action that comes from that centered place rather than frantic reaction.
What about emotionally? How does being present affect our connections, our feelings?
It massively boosts emotional intelligence. When you're truly present with yourself and others, you naturally cultivate more empathy, forgiveness, self-compassion. You develop a richer inner life, often leading to increased spiritual experience or connection.
It even reframes difficult emotions.
Absolutely. Yeah. You start to see things differently. Like grief is proof that you loved. It honors the connection. And forgiveness, It primarily frees the one carrying the weight. It releases you from being bound to a past hurt. It's about reclaiming your energy in the now.
This is powerful stuff for the individual. Let's connect it back to the bigger picture. You mentioned the reflection between inner chaos and outer systemic chaos. How does individual presence impact those larger collective issues?
It's the bedrock for what the sources call a potential new renaissance. The qualities you cultivate in the eternal now. Now that unity consciousness, compassion, inner stability, these are the essential structural codes needed for a collective shift.
So my inner state affects the whole.
Absolutely. If the collective is made of individuals lost in temporal displacement, the reflection is chaos. When individuals practice sustained presence and coherence, it's not selfish navel-gazing. It's an act of global service. You're literally broadcasting a more stable, harmonious frequency into the collective field. The real evolution needed isn't more tech. It's an evolution of consciousness.
Okay, this is crucial. This brings us to the practical how-to. If the eternal now is the only reality and our point of power, how do we actually use it? How do we make it our control panel?
It starts with the body. The body is always, always in the present moment. It's the threshold of the present moment. The simplest, most powerful practice is using your five senses fully.
Mindfulness of daily activities.
Exactly. Mundane things, eating, walking, washing your hands into sacred rituals just by bringing your full, undivided attention to the sensory experience. Feel the water, taste the food, notice the ground under your feet. Stop rushing through the present to get to the next thing. Anchor yourself here.
And managing our attention. In today's world, that feels like a superpower.
It is. One source calls it, attention is the new currency of the soul, where you place your focus attention acts like a lens, directing your consciousness. It literally shapes the fractal thread of reality you experience.
So scattered attention creates a scattered reality.
You got it. Mm-hmm. Anxious attention attracts anxious experiences. Coherent, intentional attention is your primary creative tool. Choose where you invest it. Next up is mental hygiene. This isn't about stopping thoughts you can't, really. It's about accessing the mental silence, the quiet space between thoughts.
Finding the gaps.
Yes. Gently, repeatedly, bringing your awareness back to that stillness, even for a microsecond. That's the home of the witness. And crucially, understand this. The mind believes what it repeats.
Okay.
If your mind constantly repeats worry loops, it believes them, reinforces them. Mm. But you can use this consciously. Choose empowering beliefs, affirmations, intentions, and repeat those. It's conscious reprogramming instead of unconscious conditioning.
So access the stillness, then consciously choose what to feed the system. Makes sense. What's the final step?
The final step is sacred action. This is vital. It's about integration, not rejection. We're not trying to escape being human or float away. We're harmonizing our human experience with this deeper, timeless truth.
So acting in the world, but from that place of presence.
Yes, and guided by wisdom. Focusing on actions and creations, even technologies that truly heal and align with non-dual understanding. Not just provide temporary fixes or perpetuate separation. Building bridges, not just walls. So when we pull it all together, this deep dive shows a remarkable convergence. The scientific picture, like eternalism from physics, and the mystical view, like Atman knowledge, they essentially point to the same reality. This apparent flow of linear time is, in a way, the highly pressurized playground designed for the soul's growth, for consciousness's evolution. Consciousness is the player, you are the player, and the now is the only control panel you've got.
And the power we unlock through this understanding is coherence. That inner alignment, that sustained presence, that's what gives you the ability to consciously influence which fractal threads of reality you experience, moving towards your highest potential away from fear. The challenges we face collectively really seem to demand this kind of shift, this new renaissance, rooted in remembering who we truly are.
Exactly. And the way forward isn't necessarily about convincing everyone. The sources suggest the awakened act more like gardeners than missionaries. Plant seeds of truth through your own presence, your own coherence, your compassion. Let others witness the fruits and become curious themselves.
So the ultimate takeaway here is profound. The greatest technology is consciousness itself. The power isn't out there in some future invention. It's right here, inside you. It lies in remembering what you already are. Timeless, aware, connected to everything.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener. If physics suggests the past, present, and future are all equally real and fixed in a block universe, and if your true power, your free will, lies in choosing which thread of possibility to inhabit through your coherent presence now, what seemingly small, intentional, coherent choice are you making right now, in this very moment, that will weave the most significant, most resonant pattern into the eternal fabric? The bell has tolled, symbolically speaking. The only time to answer is always, only now.